Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show. Hey, hey.
And deep cleansing breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
Oh, and my name is Hino. Thank you for tuning into our meditation hour tonight. Oh. This show is for all you songwriters and performers and musicians out there who just want to get a handle on how things work here in Music City.
That's right. Now, remember, we don't know anything.
Nah.
We've been doing this show now for 8 years, and we still have no clue what we're doing. But we are able to bring very, very smart, talented people into the studio and pick their brains and give you the opportunity to join in the conversation as well.
That is so true. And you can do that by going to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow.
I'm
you can
doing
like
right
us
now.
And chime in with your comments and questions right there. And also should mention Twitter, @TheMusicRowShow. You can find us there as well.
We're on Twitter?
Yes.
Wow.
We tweet all the time.
That's crazy. Oh, you know, I did tweet this morning, didn't I?
I really don't need to know that.
I did. I did. Hey, and in case you haven't heard, Dish subscribers, you can watch us on TV now because the Blue Highways TV network, which has carried us for 3 years, is now on Dish.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that because we're on 4 times a week on Channel 73 here in the U.S., all over the U.S., actually, and for the first time here in Nashville as well. So we're pretty thrilled about that.
It's very exciting. What a show we have tonight.
Awesome.
First up is songwriter, fiddle player, singer Andrea Zahn in hour one.
That's true. And then we're going to be talking with Luke Duke himself. Tom Wopat will be live here in hour two.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right. Well, let's get to this. Hino, do the honors.
Absolutely. Well, first up, we've got recording artist and insanely talented virtuoso fiddler. That's what we call him here in Nashville, fiddler, right? Andrea Zahn is joining us right now. Andrea. You know what? It's that Southern California thing.
Call him Hino. He loves that.
Yeah, I love that. Andrea has toured and played with an amazing variety of acts over the years. People like Vince Gill, Lyle Lovett, and for a lot of years, James Taylor. In fact, I think you were just with him a couple days ago, I think. Andrea has recorded with such artists like Yo-Yo Ma, Vince Gill, Randy Travis, Martina McBride, Alison Krauss, who's no slouch on the fiddle as well, Keb Moe, Neil Diamond, and a whole bunch of other people. And the great thing is she's got a brand new album out, which features performances and guest appearances by many big-time folks, as well as her. It's an awesome album. I listened to it today. It's called Rise. And we are just thrilled to be able to say, Andrea Zahn, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
Woo. Oh, we're happy you came.
Thanks.
Nice to be home, huh?
It is nice to be home.
You're on the road all the time.
These days, it seems that way.
This is going to be a fun interview because the publicist is right behind me, and I'm going to get kicks in the chair anytime I say something.
I got a 7-year-old. You got a 7-year-old out there.
I got to be really careful.
All eyes are on you.
I got to watch my stuff.
Man, that's like half our questions gone right now.
Right. So I'm gathering, since your brother plays bass, is that right for you?
Yes.
That you come from a very musical family.
That's true.
How were you encouraged early on musically, and was it always violin for you?
It was. You know, my dad was a composer and my mother is a fabulous oboist. And, you know, they're both classical musicians. But
right.
My dad played a lot of jazz. And we used to go to concerts all the time when I was a kid. And this was before my brother was born. But I was fascinated with the violin. And I started asking for one when I was 2. So it was they didn't believe me. And it was about, I was 5 by the time they said, well, okay, maybe she's serious.
I find that really interesting because you sing wonderfully, and I'm assuming you've always sung.
They're a lot alike, I think, the violin and the voice.
But that's also not an instrument that you can usually sing while you play.
I don't.
And you don't. So, I mean, was that at any point a deterrent, or did you learn other instruments because of that?
No,
to be able to sing around the campfire
or
whatever?
I actually really have, like, secret fantasies of being a great piano player or a great guitar player, but it's just, you know, there are only so many hours in the day.
Right.
So to do something well, I've stuck with the violin. But, yeah, there are absolutely times when I wish I could accompany myself. Well. But I bring people like Tom Utes along.
And see, we wouldn't have Tom here if you could accompany
that's
yourself.
Right,
so
see?
Lucky us.
Hi, Tom. Glad you're here. Glad you're here. So, okay, this is, we've just started our ninth year on the air. We've interviewed hundreds of writers and musicians, and I've never, ever in my life heard of someone who as a kid was a national fiddle champion. At the same time, she was winning classical violin fellowships. I mean, those are two totally different disciplines on the instrument. Am I right?
They are, but you know, it's like speaking different languages, I think. And I think if you're a kid and you start learning two languages simultaneously, that it becomes a little easier to go back and forth between the dialects.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's the same.
But I hear what you're saying, but you're telling me you know a lot of other people that are playing fiddle and violin at the same time as a young kid?
All right. Okay.
Come on, you're special. You're special. Be special. It's okay.
Did you ever, like, you know, because I grew up, see, when you mentioned languages, I grew mm-hmm. up speaking, learning and speaking three languages all at the same time growing up. And I would often, especially as a kid, I would get the words mixed up. You know, whatever.
Right. He still does.
Whatever word I learned for something first, that was the word for it, regardless
right.
of who I was talking to. So in your going between musical languages, did you ever, like, kind of mix them up at inappropriate times? And, you know,
yes, I mean I think with violin, obviously, it's, you know, a C is a C is a C, you know, I mean,
right.
So it's a matter of if you're going to slide into it, and if, you know, if there's a swing to the eighth notes,
yeah.
I think those are the things that catch you off guard. And but I somehow compartmentalized it in my mind. It was like there was fiddle music and then there was
okay
music.
You were
and
just able
yeah.
to click.
Yeah, huh. I mean, I it took a little while. Actually, the hardest thing, I think, was learning how to improvise, was to get away from the written page, because I started with classical music.
Okay.
So, and I started fiddling a few years later, and that was the hardest adjustment, I think, was just to let go of...
What? There's no music?
Where's my safety net?
Yeah.
You know, but I think, you know, I was young enough to not really know any better, too. So.
Okay. Did you ever have to kind of keep them separate? You know, did the different camps look down their noses at each other? And
oh, yeah. And actually, it's one of the reasons I moved to Nashville when I was 16.
Yeah.
As I had started college early, and my teacher, my violin teacher, really felt like the fiddle music was taking away time from my classical studies. And she mm-hmm. said, you know, you're going to have to make a choice. And I thought, well, you know, I really liked the idea of the melting pot, of finding a place where both disciplines could kind of exist together,
mm-hmm.
and felt like Nashville was a place to do that. So I decided, rather than choose, I would come down here and see what was what.
All right.
So your dad's a composer, but also mm-hmm. loves jazz,
mm-hmm.
and your mom's an oboist.
Mm-hmm.
How did they feel when they saw you going through towards that dark, seedy path of of fiddle music?
The horror.
Oh yeah, the horror. You know, I think it was an adjustment there, probably more for my mother than.
She's right out the window.
I wish she was here. We should ask her.
But I think, you know, Nashville is such a welcoming place. I think when she started to see the company I was keeping and the ways in which I could express myself in fiddle music, I think she really got on board. Thought it was a pretty good thing.
And I would imagine your dad, since he loved jazz, there's a real similarity between jazz and improvisational with yeah. that fiddle and bluegrass being able to
absolutely
just take it anywhere.
Absolutely. Actually, when I started fiddling, my dad, who was in his late, actually, I think he was my age when he, I shouldn't say how old that was, but he took up the mandolin so that he could
really?
Accompany
oh.
me at fiddle contests and things. So he
that's
was on
cool.
board all the way. He's
really
the one
cool.
who helped me find fiddle music.
So has he progressed with the mando?
Well, he did progress with the mandolin. He's been gone for about 15 years.
Okay.
But he and my mother both moved to Nashville about a year after I did, and he ended up conducting the Nashville Mandolin Ensemble and was
wow.
you know very yeah he did he
look
did
at
really
him
well with the
you
mandolin.
Got you got you know half a. bluegrass band right there between the fiddle and the mando. You know?
Exactly. We actually had a band in Champaign-Urbana where I grew up. Yeah, we
wow.
did.
Mm-hmm. I'll be darned.
Yep.
okay, so Let us live vicariously through you for a few minutes. What's it like touring with James Taylor? And what goes through your mind the first time you're playing him one of your tunes?
Oh, well. Those are two really different questions.
They are. Let's start with the first one.
So
your first time touring with James Taylor.
It's pretty euphoric. I mean, he's been a hero of mine since I was a kid.
Right.
I mean, I remember sitting down with the One Man Dog record, you know,
yes.
on vinyl.
Yes.
And that was one of those first few records I had where I'd just sit in front of the record player and just start it over, you know, and pick apart everything and just absorb it all. So I feel like he's in my DNA,
right.
you know?
Mm.
And when the phone rang and it was him calling me to come out on the road, it was like, wow. It was pretty amazing.
Was it one of those things where you didn't believe it was him at first? And
well, his office had called first. I had
I had some idea
that it was coming, but
okay.
But yeah, it was pretty surreal actually. And then his band is just one of those.
Oh yeah.
Off
They're
the
amazing.
Charts, you know, who's who player mm-hmm. bands, and it was, you know, stepping into that was incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. I just wonder how many times he hears from people, because Sweet Baby James was the first song I ever learned on the guitar.
Right.
I wonder how many times he hears from people, you are the reason
right.
I play.
Right.
In the course of a week when he's on tour and meeting people.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking too, you know, he's one of those names that's like in the same sentence with hero a lot. And
uh-huh.
it's for songwriting, it's for guitar playing, it's for singing. It's, you know, his whole musicality is attached to the word hero, which is a word that is not thrown around that many times,
mm-hmm.
really, like sincerely. And yeah, it's pretty staggering.
Imagine it would be uncomfortable hearing that after a while. That's a lot of responsibility on somebody.
It's a lot of responsibility, and he's a very humble man. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, he's just trying to do create his creations.
Sure.
You know, he's just trying to do his work, and I think he's at his most comfortable when he's playing or writing or creating. And
sure.
I think that then there's like the whole other aspect of it is the attention you get, which is kind of like, oh, wait, where did that come from? You know?
Right.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the second part of that. The first time you
played him one of your
tunes.
The first time I played him one of my tunes was when he was recording on this record. And I've been with him for almost 13 years and I'd never played him anything. And I'd asked him if he would consider singing on the record, and he was quick to say yes. And it was a little, it's a little jarring.
He probably said, "You've been holding out on me." I mean, there's some great songs on there.
He was very kind. He was very kind. I had actually gotten a little warm up because I had Vince, who was another one of my favorite songwriters.
Yeah.
You know, had him do something earlier, and I always test with Vince first. He's sort of my testing ground because he's like a brother to me now after all these years.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Well. Your first album was speaking of songwriting, your first album was made up of songs by mostly other writers.
All other people.
Yeah, all other people. Mm-hmm. And then what was the catalyst that made you start recording your own material, your own songs?
You know, I have to say that my son went through a health scare a few years ago. I mean, writing is always one of these things that's been, you know, I'm such a lover of songs and didn't know if I could write up to my own standards, you
okay.
know? And working with people like James and with Vince and Lyle Lovett, I think they're master song
absolutely
song crafters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just, it's crazy. And so, you know, I didn't want to be a hack, honestly, and I was a little intimidated about it. So I'd write things and I'd kind of go, you know. And then my son was really sick for a while, and it sort of put things in a new perspective,
mm-hmm.
everything in a new perspective. And it didn't seem like songwriting was so scary after that. And actually I had been writing a little bit, but then I met Tom, our paths crossed, and we started writing together, and there was like a really great chemistry there, and things just, we kind of hit a lucky stretch.
Well, and we're going to talk about that after the break because I have some specific questions about how you guys wrote this out. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We'd like to remind you that this segment is brought to you by our friends at Cool Springs Toyota.
Toyota of Cool Springs. That's right. Yeah, George is the owner over there. You should go when you go check out the dealership, which I know you will because it's a great place. Yeah, you should go introduce yourself to George because he'll help you out and he'll take great care of you because they do an amazing job of making the whole car buying experience and the car repair experience very comfortable and very low key and very just no pressure whatsoever of any kind.
Right, and I was going to say that's a great way to get to know them to begin with is go have your car service there because it's just a cool experience and you can go walk around, look at cars and nobody's pouncing on you.
Right.
Hey, what can I talk you out of today? None of that stuff.
None of that.
So go check them out on the web. They're toyotaofcoolsprings.com. And we're going to be right back with more of Andrea Zahn on the Music Row Show.
That's right. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with recording artist Andrea Zahn. That's a great tune off her brand new project called Rise, and the song's called Where the Water Meets the Sky. That's a great tune. That's what I was telling her during the break. That's one of my favorite tunes on the album.
Thanks. It's
got some great lines in it.
I'm reading the liner notes.
Talk about writing that one later.
I'm reading.
Oh, you're reading the liner notes?
You read. I'll talk to Andrea. Yeah.
What's the story behind that song?
The song, you know what, that was the first song we wrote, that was the first song Tom and I wrote together, and we wrote it with Kim Ritchie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, very nice. Were sitting around the table in my kitchen, and Kim had this little bit of an idea, sort of the line, where the water meets the sky, and we started thinking about what that was, and, you know, found the happy little groove, and... You know, it was just sort of that, you know, what's it like loving somebody sort of before and after the bounds of time? And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, when you have that kindred spirit connection with somebody.
Yeah.
Right.
Deep.
Cleverly disguised as like a shag kind of thing. You know, shag groove. But deep shag.
Deep shag.
It's making a comeback.
Yeah, you might get a carpet endorsement or something.
Brought to you by Carpet World.
That's what I need, an interior decorating endorsement.
There you go. Yeah. It could happen.
Yeah,
you say that this latest album was written with the core rhythm section players in mind.
Yeah.
What does that mean, and how does that influence the songs then when you're talking that way?
The core rhythm section was Steve Gadd on drums and Willie Weeks on bass.
Oh, those
now,
guys.
You know.
Yeah.
And if anybody isn't already familiar, you know, Steve is arguably one of the most recorded and best drummers in modern music.
You know,
he's played with he was the guy who played, you know, 50 Ways to Leave
Your
Lover.
Right, that great drum group.
And Asia for you with Steely Dan. And, you know, I mean, it's like drummers refer to him as Steve God. And he and I have been working with James together for the last many years. And then Willie, a great bass player, played with George Harrison, played with Donnie Hathaway, played with Doobie Brothers. And he and I have known each other for decades. As a matter of fact, the very first gig I did with Vince Gill, probably in 1990, Willie was playing bass.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, these are two colleagues that go back many, many years. And two would have become really good friends. And they both have this approach when they play music where there's a lot of space and there's a lot of wisdom and there's a lot of listening and there's a lot of grace in their playing. And I really, really wanted to take a minute and make a record with them.
Yeah.
And so as we were writing the songs, it was a conscious decision. You know, is this going to be something that favors that combination? Mm-hmm. Is this the appropriate kind of take with that, you know?
That's interesting you say that because that is the mark of a really great musician who can not overplay Right. You know, play what's right for the song. And like you said, space. I mean, space. It's almost like what you don't play is more important than what you, do play.
I don't think it's almost. I think it is. I think that's very true. Yeah,
and both of those guys definitely fit that description.
Wow. Really do.
We'd love to hear you guys play a song. You feel like playing anything for us?
Sure.
I mean, you brought all these beautiful instruments with you and stuff.
Our
and
stuff here.
We've got that crowd out there that wants to hear something. There we go.
Look at them. Related to half those people. Unbelievable. You know, that's how it works.
That's how it works. Bring your own audience.
Bring your own audience.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Better if you're related by blood. So let's do a song called Crazy If You Let It. And this is one that Tom and I wrote with Bill Lloyd. And, Crazy If You Let It. Lapping at the edges of the life I live. All those memories filling up my mind. Makes you careful with the heart you long to give. We're lonesome people in a lonesome time. You find a way to rise up to another day. You wear a smile and for a while forget it. Shake it off, take the loss, let it float away. 'Cause it can drive you crazy if you let it. Counting down the reasons to be blind with fear, as if it even matters anymore. Makes you wonder what it is you're doing here, and what it is that you've been waiting for. You find a way to rise up to another day. You wear a smile and for a while forget it. Shake it off, take the loss, let it float away. 'Cause it can drive you crazy if you let it. There's so much beauty to this world we're born in. For every dark night there awaits another morning.
Tom, what a touch you have there.
Well, thank you.
My goodness. Nice. That was beautiful.
So Andre, what is your main instrument when you're writing? Do you write on the violin? Or,
I do.
You know, in terms of like coming up with chords and things?
I do. You know, I can kind of...
Okay.
A little bit, but then, you know, the other thing is having somebody like Tom and Bill and Kim who have great guitar chops. You know,
okay.
Kind of...
So when you're writing by yourself, you kind of do chords on the violin a little bit.
But you know, I have a piano at my house, and I have a guitar. I'm not good at them, but I can, you know, if I need to.
Just to kind of help put things together.
Something tells me her not good at guitar is probably a lot better than my guitar You know?
Yeah.
Good.
No, here's the thing.
Good.
Sorry. Trust me. It's bad.
I, you know.
It's bad.
Well, you know, we've got a few guitars in the room. We could
just check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here, no pressure.
No pressure at all.
Let's do a quick sending out of your web address.
Sure. It's andreazon.com.
Z-O-N-N.
Z-O-N-N. Yes.
.com. Okay. Mm-hmm. The new album is Rise. We still have a few minutes. So songwriting craft-wise, has performing with what you said were legends like James Taylor, Lyle Lovett, Vince Gill. Has that helped or slowed your evolution as a writer, do you think?
You know, I can't say anything but that it's helped. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't know that there's a pace other than just sort of the way things naturally unfold. I mean, I can't imagine not spending the time kind of absorbing, even just by osmosis, that kind of craft. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, along the way, did you get any personal writing tips from any of these folks? I mean, did you kind of keep, because you mentioned you kept your songwriting a little bit on the down low.
It was sort of a closeted kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never said, "Hey, James, I'm having trouble with this one transition. What do I do here?" or whatever.
No. I never did. I don't know. It's, you know.
What rhymes with purple nurple?
Yeah.
That's a maple circle.
Maple circle, see?
There we go. Songwriter right there.
Good stuff.
That's awesome.
That's why we're holding down the big
bucks. That's right. this album is with Compass?
It is with Compass.
Talk about them. What makes this record label such a good fit for you as a musician? And was there any... There's a lot of different music going on in this. How did they feel about that?
This is why they are such a great label, is that they were okay with that. There are a lot of styles represented on this record, as you say. And the thing I love about Compass is that they really are very artist-centered. Allison Brown, who's an incredible banjo player, and her husband, Gary West, who's a great musician, great bass player. I mean, they just have a real affection for music, roots music of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got huge Celtic roster and a huge bluegrass roster and singer-songwriters. And I think for them, the priority is always on just artistry and then figure out where it fits later. And Allison and I have been making music together for 25 or 30 years. And it's wonderful to be there with, you know, like sort of in her care, you know, it's great.
And how does that work as an independent musician that's doing this?
Mm-hmm.
How much, and I've asked this of any independent musician that comes in here, but how much are you having to stay on top of all the different aspects of the business part of it?
That's a really good question. 'Cause right now I feel like I'm juggling, about as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I am getting the crash course in Twitter. I like the whole social media thing is sort of out of my comfort zone.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I like posting pictures of my child on there and talking about, you know, putting pictures of dinner,
up,
you know, and like, oh my God, my hair is so bad today. But like pushing, like, you know, being your own marketing sort of director is tough.
Yeah.
And I think
it's easier singing somebody else's praises than your
absolutely,
own.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, but I've been rightly advised to bring in, some help with some publicity and things. So it's, you know, I'm a real fan of delegating.
Yeah, I'm gonna and she's be really smiling over there on the couch,
right,
so that's
over
perfect.
There, and
yeah.
Sarah over there is fantastic at things that I don't have to deal with.
Yay.
So, you know, no, and I think, you know, just as a, for me, I really marvel at artists that do it all. That book their own gigs and do their own publicity and do their own distribution. I mean, that's full-time work.
Sure. Right.
All of those are full-time things. Yeah. So.
Awesome.
We're here with Andrea Zahn. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around. We're going to be back with much, much more.
time the wind blows.
Oh, yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's a fun tune called No Reason to Feel Good off of Andrea Zahn's new album Rise.
And Andrea's
got some, great guitar playing there.
And yeah, Keb Mo's in there, too.
Keb Mo's in there, too, yeah.
A couple good guitar players on there, yeah.
If you like that sort of thing.
If you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I do. I want to talk about this song, if I may.
Sure.
Because I've never heard fiddle-driven blues music before, and I like it.
Come on, baby.
I like it.
Vassar Clements, Papa John Creech, come
on. No.
Really?
No.
I'm
going to write it down.
Hook you up.
Papa John Creech.
Papa John Creech.
Papa don't preach.
No,
that's
don't
a whole
mess
other
me
thing.
Up here.
No, no, no.
Papa
John Creech.
Creech.
C R E A C H.
I know.
I think.
All
wait
right.
a minute. Okay.
He's
going to
go
and
pull
Vassar
up a Madonna
Clements.
Album now.
I'm going to check it out. But talk about writing this one and then recording it with Keb Mo.
Oh, you know.
This was another one with
this
Bill Lloyd.
This was another one with Bill Lloyd and Tom.
And Tom.
And this was another. We wrote a lot of them around the kitchen table at my house. And this was the last one that we wrote, right?
I
the
think
final
so.
One that, yeah. that we did for the record. And it was just, we were just playing with this groove. And Tom came up with this little guitar riff thing. And we didn't really have an idea. But it was February or something. And it was cold outside. And we were kind of longing for spring. And we were going, you know, it's like when you can, that first day you can open the window. It's the first day when you start feeling like, spring and like mm-hmm. you don't like it lightens your step and it
sure
you don't need like something to happen to feel good, like you're just happy for the sake of being happy and mm-hmm. it's, you know, it just there's just a bunch of crap we came up with.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Piece of cake.
And now, was he and in then, the studio with you? Did you guys do it together?
No, actually, that was, I'd say that scheduling-wise, Kev and I had a really tough time getting in the same town at the same time. It was about 9 months after everything else was done, and finally went over to his house, and we were both off the road for a day or something,
minutes,
and it was
yeah.
like, I know, it was like, yeah. okay, now? Okay, great.
Oh,
but I didn't
funny.
Want to do it without him, because he's so fantastic.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
He is.
So, just out of curiosity, what are some tips you might have for being a successful supporting musician, either on the road or in the studio?
That's a great question. You know, for me, it's being a supporting musician is really about understanding, for me, it's the understanding of what an artist's vision is and how do you sort of weave yourself into that fabric.
Okay.
How do you, you know, what role can you play in realizing their vision?
Okay.
And it's a very empathetic process to me. It's like there's all these different layers, ways to cradle a song and cradle a singer, I think. So that's, to me, it's a very empathetic process.
Hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. I want to mention that you have a couple of really cool local residency gigs at the station, and the 29th, which is this coming Tuesday, and then the 6th of October, which I'm absolutely going to be there for that. Tell us what to expect and what time does it start?
We are starting, we're doing a late show after Doyle and Debbie.
Which is, if you haven't seen them,
hysterical.
You have to go see them.
Hysterical. So we're going to go on at about 9:30, but we're only going to play one big long set. We'll be done at about 11 o'clock because it's school night.
Mm-hmm.
We have been doing super secret special guests, but I think I have to let the cat out of the bag this week because we have 3 super secret special guests.
What?
3 of them. And they're fantastic.
And
we have, you know, I'm looking at the sounds schedule right here in front of me, and I can't mm-hmm. help but think of Peter Cooper, who is not only a fantastic songwriter, singer, storyteller, mm-hmm. Journalist, but also one of the better baseball fans, one of the bigger baseball fans I know. So he's going to come sing with us.
Very cool.
Bill Lloyd is going to come sing with us.
Excellent.
And
wonderful.
John Cowan.
Is
oh,
great.
Yeah. So no
did,
slouches there.
You were on his 60 album, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah,
nice. Yeah.
Well, that, and that's this coming week, or is that
that's
both
this
weeks?
Coming week. That's the, just this
Tuesday.
Week. I'm not talking about next week.
Next week, you're not going to talk about who's going to be there.
Yeah.
Still a super secret.
Okay,
special.
Mick Jagger.
Did I say that?
Oops.
Jagger does
whoa.
Bluegrass.
Whoa.
That's going to be interesting.
great. God, I don't think he even knows about it. Unbelievable.
Well, he and I have been talking a bit.
You know what? We'll take a break right now. We'll give him a call for you. We'll get it all worked out.
Yeah, could you just ring him up?
Yeah, we'll do that. Great. We're going to be back with a whole lot more of Andrea's On here on the Music Row Show. So come on back in just a few minutes.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with Andrea Zahn, and that's a tune. That's the title tune off of her new album, Rise. Which she denies it.
I saw what you did.
It's about baking, but she denies that it's about baking.
You know, if it feels good to you.
To you, yeah. It's about getting up in the morning.
Didn't we start by saying that this was a Zen show? If you like it, it's like the Tom Ross painting, right. You know, this is your happy little
tree.
Sure.
There's a happy tree.
Like. Yes.
Oh, that's funny. Well, you know what? We only have a few minutes left, and we'd love to get a song out of you guys.
It flew. It flew.
It really did.
What are you going to sing for us?
We're going to do a happy little love song.
Nice.
As told through a baseball metaphor.
Hmm. Huh. Okay.
Clever, right?
Let's do it.
It's called Another Swing and a Miss. It's one that we wrote with Peter Cooper, and it goes like this. One, two, three. Another swing and a miss, another one off the list. Three and you're out, I'm beginning to doubt of the game. Thought it would help, but it hurt. Left me kicking the dirt. Now a smile is a scowl. Thought love was fair, it was foul, and it's my claim to fame. In the spring it was grand, he was holding my hand. Summer was a hell of a grind. Now the October wind says I've lost once again. Maybe next season I'll find another chance to begin. Play for the win. When it's time to play ball, they'll knock it over the wall instead of just another swing and a miss.
AndreaZahn.com. Make sure and check her out at the station. And if you're here in Nashville, either this Tuesday, the 29th, or next Tuesday, October 6th at 9 p.m. And this has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Good.
Thanks.
Good.
And where can people buy your new CD, Rise?
You can buy it and on the website, andreazahn.com, at iTunes, Amazon, compassrecords.com, and I think it's over in some brick-and-mortar places like Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And it just came out 2 days ago.
And it did just come out 2 days ago. And if they come to the Station Inn, we just might have some.
What?
I know. Crazy. Crazy, right?
And I'm guessing you might autograph them.
I could do that.
You could do that.
All right.
AndreaZahn.com. Go check that out. And stay here. Stick around for the next hour of the show. We got Tom Wopat joining us. Yes, you heard right. Luke Duke is going to be joining us.
Crazy.
He's got an amazing story, great musical career we want to talk about. So you come on back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.
Strong heart.